So as I had mentioned before the break, I read something a few days ago. It's actually translated a few days ago. And I first just read it. So, you know, I'm going to try to understand what these words mean. And then it just gripped me. Now, over time, in fact, we are right now beginning our review of Yeshaya, Isaiah chapter 1. And we're going to go through all through 1 and all through 2. And what you do not know now, but what you do know now, is that God said that I set up and my plan and what I did initially was to raise children as a family. I lifted them up. I gave them every possible beneficial and nurturing thing I could possibly provide to them. And then they rejected me. God tried to establish a family relationship and man rejected them. And then what we will find out is that everything that God criticizes from that point on is religious in nature.
Mm-hmm.
And you go all the way through chapter 1 and chapter 2 of Yeshaya, Isaiah. And what you have is God constantly and consistently criticizing religion.
Yeah.
Then he says this. Indeed, behold, henna, look up and pay attention. The upright pillar of the tabernacle, Yahweh, of the spiritual implements, is removing from Jerusalem and Yehuda the support which upholds life, the provisions which are extended by the shepherd's staff, all the supplies of bread, and all the supplies of water. So initially, my normal way, I look at the details and I said, okay, I want to know what henna means and why, whether or not henna is important here. And I write the entire rest of the chapters on henna, which means look up and pay attention. When it's used, how it's used, why it's used, what it means. I studied a little bit about the upright pillar, which is the Edon, upright pillar of the tabernacle, the foundation who holds up the tent that holds up the tent of the witness. I thought that was interesting. I tied Yahweh's name to henna. And then I looked at the three ways that Meshen was written in this text. Meshen, Meshenah, Bashan. And noticed that two were masculine, one was feminine. And recognized that Yahweh, as our Heavenly Father, projects a masculine persona as our father, as the set-apart spirit, feminine, and as the son, masculine. I said, probably something of interest there. But then as I pursued henna, I said, you know, there's two questions here that need to be asked. We need the answer to two questions. If Yahweh says that he is now withdrawing, he is removing the provisions that uphold life, what are they? What are the provisions that uphold life? And number two, how do we get them back? I mean, he has spent now two chapters saying, because you are religious, you have not only rejected me, but now saying, because you're religious, I'm going to withhold the provisions that uphold life.
But he has to.
But what are they?
Well,
what are they? And what is it? What are they? And how do we get them back?
Mm-hmm. Well, you have to turn from one house and move, go back to the original house instead of Satan's house.
Yeah.
You got to walk away from it. I mean,
yeah. Well, you know what they are?
Sure.
The five conditions of the covenant,
mm-hmm.
and the first four, particularly the first two,
mm-hmm.
of the Mikra, the invitations to be called out and meet with God.
Yeah.
Those are the provisions.
Right.
And since the Mikra is a subset of the conditions of the covenant, the third condition of the covenant and the Mikra are one and the same.
Mm-hmm.
So it just all gets down to, if you're religious, you're in violation of my covenant. if you're in violation of my covenant, then my provisions for life have been removed from you.
Right. You can't dwell in two houses.
So how do you get them back? And is the answer.
Yeah. Look that pertains to the question I was going to ask you later about 1:5, because
I
got into it, the same conclusion is if you just keep translating the words even deeper, he's real, real obvious about religion. It's all about religion.
So what I did is I said, you know, what I'm going to do is I'm going to track, because I think that henna was put here. It's key henna. And, you know, key is not really an independent word by itself. It's tied to henna. It means surely henna, truly henna, indeed henna, because henna, for the reason henna. It's to emphasize henna. And so henna, I thought, might hold the answer. How does God use henna? When does he use henna? What does he say and with regard to henna? Now, first, how is henna written? Only three letters. It's not hard.
Should be a hey, nin, and a hey, right?
That's it. What's a hey?
Hey is a person standing up, masculine in this position.
Reaching up and looking up, right?
Reaching up and beholding something.
What's the
seriously
end hey?
Seriously looking now.
The end hey is a feminine, a female looking up, reaching up.
Same thing, feminine position, right?
Standing up, looking up, reaching up. Do you know that the letter now called hey in Hebrew, which is this person standing up, reaching up, looking up to God?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what the original name of that letter was?
Well, the original, far back as I go, is a hey, H-E-Y, like
nope.
A hey.
Nope.
No?
No. That's the current name of the letter.
Hmm. Okay.
Henna.
Oh, henna.
Henna. Do you know what hey means just by itself?
It means behold.
Behold. It means behold. Look up, reach up.
Observe, I guess.
That is correct. Mm-hmm. The letter itself is defined by its original name. Henna. It's depicted in the caricature. That individual that is drawn isn't just standing up and reaching up. They're henna. Mm-hmm. Looking up and paying attention. So I track the use of henna. And you know the first time it's used?
Let me guess here.
We talk about violence here, and that God wanted to resolve the fact that mankind had become overly violent. How about that for a clue?
Well, again, unless you're talking about Noah or something.
You got it.
Really?
First time he uses it, he's talking to Noah.
And that makes this extremely pertinent as we're
in
the case of Noah's. Something just like Noah's days.
Right. And he says to Noah, hey, henna, look up now and pay attention.
Interesting.
Man has become so vicious, so violent. I've got to come to a resolution here. And, of course, then he presents to Noah a set of instructions.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells Noah, if you follow these instructions, you're going to live, and so is your family. And Noah did exactly what God said.
Mm-hmm.
And God delivered exactly as he promised.
Yeah.
And then Yahweh called that a covenant. Now there is a hell of a clue as to how you get it back.
Yeah.
As to what it is and how you get it back. Now, I did not know when the second occurrence of henna was going to be. But it is in a really interesting place. You know one of the stories that comes up almost immediately after the flood?
Abraham?
No. Oh, no, there's an intervening story.
Well, we got to go through, wait a minute, we got to go through Nimrod and...
Oh, yeah, Babel.
Babel, yeah.
Yeah, he talks about man's language and man being capable of doing whatever he pleases.
Mm-hmm.
And then God said, I think we're going to need to confuse the language here. We don't confuse the language. Man will do whatever he pleases. And that ain't a good thing, because we'll be right back to where we were before the flood. And so God uses behold in his depiction of Babel. of corrupting confusion, particularly using words. Now, the next time Babel comes up, it comes up in relation to the meetings that Yahweh had with Abraham. And it's not in every meeting, but it's in most all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And most all of the time, it's Abraham didn't get it. And God saying, Hena, look up. Pay attention.
Just point it.
Now, I've been going through this, and it's going to end up being 70, 80 pages by the time I've done, and I'm going to backtrack now and do things that I had skipped over as I went through it. So I'm a long way from being completed with this, and this what I'm going to read to you now will create the false impression that I'm much further along, because I'm really not. I'm going to have to do some backtracking here. But I wanted to share what happened during the last meeting between Yahweh and Abraham. First of all, do you know how many times that Yahweh and Abraham met? I'll give you one guess. Only one answer counts.
Seven.
About seven times. Yeah. About seven times.
I think there's a teaching element there.
This is what we read. This is the beginning of the chapter 22. This is the beginning of the seventh meeting. Seventh meeting hadn't even taken place at this point. This is the preamble to the seventh meeting. And it came to exist after these words that the Almighty attempted to ascertain the understanding and examine the appropriateness of the response by testing Abraham. Now, I translated that, guys, and I might have had the single biggest exclamation of the 15 years I've been doing this. The reasons are many. This evaluation came after these conversations between Yahweh and Abraham regarding the covenant. And therefore, the test would be based upon, one, how well Abraham had listened. Two, how well he had retained and thus remembered. Three, to what degree he understood what had been conveyed. Four, whether he had acted appropriately in response to what God said. And five, whether or not his decisions had been correct and his reply sincere. Now, I've been a lone voice calling out in the wilderness saying this very thing, especially regarding the conditions of the covenant, for the better part of a decade. Yahweh gave us his Torah to teach us about him and to guide us to him. It is filled with vital information and instructions that we need to know, to understand, to accept, and to act upon if we want to engage in a relationship and receive his provision for life. Not only are there right and wrong answers, nothing is more important than responding correctly, and equally important, the answers to the test Yahweh was conducting were provided by Yahweh during his conversations with Abraham. Now, since faith is a substitute for knowing, it cannot be evaluated. Unless information and instruction leading to knowledge and understanding were the issue, there could not have been a test. Moreover, if the criterion had been obedience to a set of laws, there would have been a trial based upon prior behavior rather than an evaluation of forthcoming actions. Therefore, the basis of Christianity is wrong, as is Judaism. Let me say this again. There is no objective test for faith, but there is for knowledge. There are right and wrong answers. Our prior actions can be tried, and they can be judged, but never tested. This was not a trial. It was a test. It was not based upon prior obedience or compliance. Let me read the verb again. And it came to exist after these words, following these statements and conversations, that the Almighty, Ha Elohim, attempted to ascertain the understanding and examine the appropriateness of the response by testing Abraham. Naka Eth wanted proof of the education, knowledge, and comprehension, and considering the consequences, decided to evaluate the acumen, judgment, ability to make rational decisions, and the validity of the forthcoming actions during a situation involving challenging circumstances so as to assess Abraham. It was written in the PO Perfect. What that means is during a finite period of time, the object, Abraham, would suffer the effect of a complete test and would be totally influenced by the result. You know, I had thought that the 119th Psalm was a comprehensive and irrefutable affirmation that our judgment and conclusions regarding the Torah and its covenant were accurate, that it existed as teaching and instruction, that we are to observe so as to know, think about so as to understand, accept, and then respond to. And it is our knowledge, understanding, acceptance, and engagement based upon those instructions that determines whether or not we're part of the covenant or not. And the covenant is the only means to uphold life. I thought that was the gist of the story that Yahweh told to Abraham. I thought that was the gist of what Dode had written about the Torah. And I don't know why, in all of the writings that I have done about the covenant, that I did not somehow see, understand, properly perceive this statement in the opening book of the Torah, Bereshith, in the beginning, Genesis 22:1. I don't know how I missed it. But this says exactly that. If you think of now everything that God has discussed with Abraham thus far, the conditions he has outlined for Abraham's participation, the benefits he has provided, Abraham's response. He's now saying, based upon everything that I've said, I'm now going to establish a means to evaluate whether or not he remembered, whether he listened, remembered, understood, is properly accepted, and will appropriately act based upon all of this. And I'm going to create a challenging circumstance to determine the genuineness of all of this. Did he understand? Will he respond appropriately? You could not have a more definite affirmation that what I think is the single most important insight of these 15 years of writing, 15 years of translating, 15 years of composing these books and of doing these shows. My assessment is the single most important insight that we have provided thus far is that the covenant is the only means to uphold life. It's the only way to establish a relationship with God. It has five terms and conditions which must be known, understood, accepted, and acted upon to participate in the covenant. The third condition of the covenant, requires our attendance at the first four mikre, and that it empowers our ability to participate in and be productive in the final three, and that the first condition of the covenant, its lone prerequisite, is that we must first stop being religious. And that if we're not willing to walk away from the family of man and to cease being religious, there is no opportunity. God's statement in Yeshayah 3:1, followed by this one now in Bereshith 22:1, affirms that that's all correct. I don't think there's anyone else on the planet outside of the group that has joined the covenant through these translations, these shows, these writings, that understands, that's even talking about the fact that there are five terms and conditions of the covenant that must be known, understood, accepted, and correctly acted upon, and that they include walking away, disassociating from all things religious, coming to know and understand Yahweh's testimonies so that you can trust and rely on Him, to walk to Him so that He can perfect us through Pesach and Matzah, leading to Bechorim being adopted into His family and then empowered and enriched. And that the only way for us to know these things is to closely examine and carefully consider the terms and conditions of the covenant and to show that we are committed, to show that we're willing to act, to demonstrate that we understand we're to circumcise our sons so that they can remember and so that we can remember. I don't think there's any place else that is being presented. And yet, there is nothing more important. It's the fulcrum upon which life pivots. There's only one covenant. And you're either in harmony with it or you're in conflict with it. And there's only five conditions and there's five benefits. Why is it? A lot of smart people around in this world.
Yeah.
A lot of well-read people around in this world.
It's pretty plainly written, too.
Yeah. A lot of people smarter than you and I.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people know more than you and I.
Mm-hmm.
With this being the only means to sustain life, with this being the only way to engage in a relationship with the Creator of the universe, with immortality and perfection and adoption into Yahweh's family, infinite enrichment and empowerment at stake. Why are there less than 1,000 people that even know about this?
That's beyond sad.
You know, when I was absent for the systemic poison ivy 2 weeks ago, you guys decided, why don't we just go to the basics? Let's talk about the terms and conditions of the covenant.
Yes, sir.
What are they? What do they mean?
Sure.
Yeah, what do they mean?
Yeah.
How do we
participate?
How do we respond to them?
Yeah.
Why is it appropriate? Why do we have to respond? I mean, Yahweh was going to test Abraham. Not going to try him. I mean, that's profound. That means that faith is irrelevant. There is no test for faith. There's no right and wrong for faith. And that means that it couldn't be obedience to a set of laws because you don't test that, particularly in the future. You try it based upon past behavior. And it renders every other interpretation of Yahweh's witness moot.
It also reinforces the Torah being a teaching instrument.
Correct.
Teacher's test.
Correct. Correct. Absolutely correct. And let me say it again. Correct. It's all that matters. What did Yahweh say of Abraham when Abraham finally understood and got the correct answer? What did he say about Abraham? He said, you are...
Tzedek. You are.
Right.
Perfect in my eyes.
I'm going to consider you right based upon this. What
no,
did,
right.
what did Yahweh say of the flawed individual known as Dod?
Dod.
David. What did he say about him?
He said he was Tzedek. He understood this. He responded appropriately.
He was right. He was right.
What is the same thing of you and I.
Tzedek has two connotations. They're both related. But related in a way that most people don't understand. The primary meaning of Tzedek means right.
Mm-hmm.
What's the secondary meaning?
Perfected.
Very closely related. No, very closely related. In fact, it's...
right is straight.
It's, it's essentially identical to henna.
Henna? Well,
it
means...
Standing
upright like the hay, of course.
Right.
Good, yeah.
Yep. Now, why do you think that upright is synonymous with right as it relates to the only test that matters when it comes to our relationship with Yahweh and our ability, his ability to support life? Upright.
Mm-hmm.
It's because the alternative in religion, you are told to bow down.
Right.
And in a relationship, you stand upright, walk together.
Yes.
Side by side.
Yeah.
That is the difference. If you are upright in Yahweh's presence, you understand that it's a relationship. If you're bowed down, you've got it all wrong.
And don't you think in all these 22 letters he would have put a little character bowing down if he thought that was important?
Yeah. Kirk, at any time in your life, would you consider yourself physically strong?
Yeah, well, stronger than I am now when I was younger. But
all right. At the heat, at the height of your strength, were you capable of lifting Yahweh up?
Hardly. No, don't be ludicrous.
No. What if you elicited every strong man in the world?
Couldn't do it.
What if you empowered every tool that man has ever developed?
There's no such lever that can lift the world, much less Yahweh.
Okay, so. This idea of uplifting God by bowing down in prayer and praise, that's ridiculous, isn't it? Can't be done.
And whose hand is reaching down to do what?
Yeah.
Yeah, come on.
Now, is it possible for a father to lift a child?
Yes, indeed.
Can a child lift the father?
Hardly.
No. So, what Deanna was trying to say is...
You have to
I
be
want you
just...
To, I'm here to... I'm your heavenly father. I want to lift you up.
Yeah.
If you try to lift me up, this is stupid. And it's demeaning to think that I would create an inferior being for the purposes of lifting me up, of praising me. But it is absolutely moral that I would create an inferior being for the purpose of enhancing that being, of enriching that being, of doing everything I can to lift that being up.
Right. And now we know even more clearly that this lifting up is so beyond just making our lives better, so-called. We're thinking when you start thinking in terms of dimensions, he's trying to turn you into
seven.
Light.
Yeah.
My gosh.
Seven.
Yeah. This is just...
I told you that henna was two hays and a nun.
Mm-hmm.
Two hays on either side of a nun. What's the nun in Hebrew?
The nun is the inheritance, the future family.
Drawn in the form of
seed,
drawn in the form of what?
Sperm. Sure.
Sperm. So if you stand up, you can become God's child.
Mm-hmm.
Inherit all that he has to give. Do you know of another word, maybe a verb, that has two hays and a letter in between?
Hiya.
Hiya, the basis of Yahweh's name. How about Yahweh's name?
Is that two hays too?
Mm-hmm.